GMP fans, a wise man with a fantastic accent once told me,
"Losers always whine about your best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen."
Because today we're covering The Rock!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasure.
Oh yeah, three-way Shakeway dance! We should really get sponsored by Shake Weight by now.
I'm desperately trying to.
Like, Shake Weight, if you still exist as a company, you should sponsor our show.
I say I'm desperately trying to, but this is literally all I do to try. I don't reach out to them in any other way.
I just do this gesture.
For 5 seconds, I pretend I have
How
two
cool
Shake Weights.
How cool would it be, though?
That was bad, though. My arms are already tired from just shaking like that.
It's a real workout.
Yeah. It's a real workout.
Imagine if you had a Shake Weight.
Next week, if we actually just start the show like this with a Shake Weight, just, you know, the jerk off motion. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, I started the show on a high note already. We are covering
Nowhere to go but down,
just like our country. I wouldn't get political, and I'm 45 seconds in.
You waited as long as you could.
Anyways, I'm your host, Ben Begley, and with me as always is Jesse McIntosh over here.
Hi, I'm Jesse McIntosh.
Hey, where can they find you, Jesse?
You can find me at Too Much Jesse on Instagram and Twitter, at The Prom Losers for Sketch.
Yeah, and then also, guys, I've done shout-outs to Corey Ular several times on this show and to several of our buddies. This is one of the original OG Akron friends of mine. I've known this guy since first grade. We've been best friends since first grade. He was one of two best men in my wedding. I had two best men. Best mans? Whatever.
Man sounds correct.
I think Corey Ular! Yes!
Yeah.
Here we go. I'm so excited.
Let's get ready for the fun. Here's the thing.
To preface all of this, Corey, you're not like a comedian.
Tell them what do you do?
What do you do for a living?
I am currently an engineer, mechanical engineer. So they're very well known for their humor their interest.
You can't tell me there's not comedy in engineering.
I guess there might be. It's kind of funny when stuff falls down, but then you get sued. So that's kind of shitty.
Yes!
You're killing.
But Corey, you and I have a history of calling each other up because you now live back in Ohio. You did live out here briefly. But a lot of times you and I have a history of calling each other, meaning to talk about actual life stuff, and then getting sucked in a vortex of ridiculous conversations, analyzing movies.
Yes.
And we've had, I think, a half hour conversation on who would win in a fight between a bear and an alligator.
It's a bear. The bear is the most dominant animal on the planet. I'm sorry.
You convinced
me. If anybody's
me.
Listening, they debate this. You can call me up.
Between a bear and an alligator.
A bear is the most dominant animal on the planet.
I agree. It took me a half hour to convince me, but I'm not going to go down that path again, because I already did.
Let that go.
Anyway, so this is why Corey's visiting. He's hanging out with me, meeting my daughter for the first time, and I thought he's listened to a bunch of the episodes, and like I changed that. He's listened to a bunch. He's listened to every single episode.
Multiple times.
Jesse is my favorite part of the show.
As he should be.
Mine too.
I think he's the favorite part of the show for everyone.
That's absolutely
Everybody
not true.
Just comments like, Ben's just like a crazy yelling
guy. Kind of there.
Jesse kind of sneaks in all the sly things, and I'm just the really screamy yelly dude.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
That's why we need a third person.
To balance the force.
Uh-huh.
So today we're talking The Rock, which I could have sworn that I or Josh McCouga had covered before. And again, I did the thing with Last Action Hero where I checked the list three times to make sure. Hasn't been done, and I think...
If I may, one more time than Santa Claus checks his list.
You're right.
Santa Claus checks it twice.
I checked it three times.
You are more thorough than Saint
Nick.
Well,
I had checked it twice, and then somebody on Twitter called me out and said, I thought you guys had done it, and I panicked, and I checked it thrice.
Yeah.
I checked it thrice.
Good for you.
A thrice time.
A thrice time.
So, I think if I remember right back when McCouga and I did the show, he and I would always argue that this movie is perfect and not guilty. And I will still stand by the fact that it is a perfect 90s action film. Yep. But rewatching it for the first time in probably a decade, there are definitely guilty moments. But I think this movie is still like one of my top 10 favorite action films of all time. So when I first saw it, I think we may have seen it in theaters together.
That would not surprise me.
I'm pretty sure we did. And I remember being blown away by never thinking Nick Cage could be an action hero until this, and then being like, oh, I like this kind of nerdy, tough action hero guy. Mm-hmm. And Sean Connery, I'd seen maybe like one or two Bond films, and I thought he was fucking awesome. And also, we were talking about this.
Yeah.
The villain in this movie, Ed Harris, up until then, I'd only really seen stereotypical mustache twirling bad guys that had very nefarious motives. But even rewatching it now, he's a really sympathetic villain.
Yeah.
And the choices he makes are motivated by a genuine pain for the soldiers that he lost. And I think that's there's some pathos. Is that what I'm looking for in this? There's some really good emotional backbone to the ridiculousness of this movie. So I loved it when I saw it. I think it still lives up to when I first saw it. Just some of the over-the-top explosions hint at where Bay eventually now has become when we talked about like Transformers 3.
Yeah.
It's like you get hints of it here where it's still reined in, like his goofy characters.
Sure.
But now he's become a parody of himself.
Yeah, and it's almost like he was almost forced to rein it in because they're on an isolated island.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't really, like, blow it all out the way he would tries. Want to. Yeah.
He tries his damnedest.
He does the biggest that he can in a constrained place.
The giant fucking napalm thing that he throws into the tunnels.
Yeah.
Where we were talking how they're running in, like, 2 feet of water.
Right.
And they somehow dodge all the flames.
Right. I don't know if that's something that would happen. But yeah, I was also thinking when I was watching this, and we can, like, get into it for real in a minute here, but I was thinking, like, has there ever in the history of human existence been a car chase like any car chase we've seen in movies? Like, has there ever been...
That's a good point.
What was your point about how, like... Everything he hits.
Oh wait, yeah. Why is it that every parked car explodes? Like, it's apparently, yeah. Like if you live in San Francisco, when you get out of your car, you put dynamite in it. So the minute somebody hits your car, you're just going to explode.
Every parked car explodes.
Listen,
the meter made car explodes when it hits another car.
You wouldn't put dynamite in your car before parking it. That's dangerous.
You're right.
You don't want to do that.
True. So
you're not going to keep your dynamite on you. So you put it in the parked car.
And we were debating which things he hits, and I guess we're jumping ahead to the car chase already, but like we were debating which things he hits that actually cause obstacles and which things are just for destruction's sake.
Well, my favorite part of any like chase scene, and the chase scene is usually the prelude to the car chase, but any like on foot chase scene when people are running through crowds and they like just seek people out to push them over.
Well, it's when they're running through the kitchen in the hotel, it seems like they run into every damn coffee pot in that hotel. Like there are just stacks of coffee pots
every
sitting in the way. And you're like, oh, I could walk around this, but I'm going to run straight through it instead.
Sure. I mean, it's for the story.
Yeah,
like, you want to be able to tell your friends later, I fucked up some coffee pots.
My favorite is the two catering staff that not only get knocked down, but then Sean Connery, like, tramples and kicks over them. And then you can tell they've just gotten back up. And they're, like, picking up everything, like, I got to wash these dishes. And then Cage comes through and shoves them back down.
Yeah.
That's my favorite in chase sequences, when the same person... But let's just talk about the car chase. Fuck it. Then we'll go to the 3 minutes, because we're talking about it now. We were talking about how every cliched obstacle comes up. I'm surprised there wasn't a woman pushing a baby. That's the only thing there. But then that turns out to be a homeless woman pushing a thing full of cans.
Yeah, there was still someone pushing something.
No, there's an old lady with a walker.
Yep. Right.
And then he swerves and hits the trolley to miss that. And then there's Nick Cage dodging people that are falling out of the trolley. There's every single thing that could possibly get in the way. The water truck pulling up, construction blocking an entire block of San Francisco.
And the guy who, like... I guess is working the trolley. This is my favorite part, because he doesn't own that trolley, but he reacts as if like his life savings just went down the drain. He gets up so distraught.
That motherfucker ain't safe nowhere.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I felt so bad for that guy.
I did too.
And you gotta love the lasting impression that he makes being on camera for all of like 10 seconds in the movie.
Yeah.
Now you're worried about what has happened to his life. Like, where is this guy's life
going?
This
is the rabbit hole I go down every single movie
we watch. It's like you're concerned for the library in The Mummy.
Yeah.
Where when we watched The Mummy, Jesse was so hung up on what happened to the library after Rachel Weisz knocks over all the shelves.
Yeah, they destroyed the library, and then the library owner, like, was killed. Huh. And then we never saw it again.
First off, when the trolley... crashes into another car and they both explode enough to launch it about 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
Again, just San Francisco, guys, it's not safe to have dynamite in your driving car or your parked car. Just, like, be safe about this, okay? Maybe it was a 90s thing and you're over it now, but, I mean... And specifically if you're hiding it in your gas...
I wouldn't do that.
Gaslight,
yeah.
I would not do that.
I would clearly. I mean, hide it in plain view.
They're hiding it under the hood right next to the engine because that's the best place to hide dynamite.
Seems like a front seat sort of thing.
Yeah, it does.
Like a front passenger seat. That way you're not likely to sit on it when you get in the
glove
car.
Box.
Yeah, if you're in a hurry and you don't want to open other doors, you just throw it in there.
They just have a lot of need for dynamite in San Francisco. Oh, my God. Okay, so let's.
Understandable.
Town's blowing up, man.
So when you first saw it, Jesse, I know we kind of skipped around, but when you first saw it, what was your opinion on this? You own this.
This is a movie that I own.
Which is rare.
So I have the copy if anyone needs to borrow it.
And it's on VHS.
Yes. It's it's on audio cassette. In the theater, I recorded it, and now I have an audio cassette.
On your Walkman. And
I close my eyes and imagine what's happening.
You just remember everything.
So if I, miss any, specific visual that you guys are
it's
talking about,
you
it's
because
I did it audio. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
how does that car chase sound on audio? It's just like a...
Sounds pretty explodey.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very explodey.
Yeah. I saw it not in theaters. I saw it on video. I rented it, I think, through Netflix, and I really liked it.
Wait. So when did you see it? Not around when it came. It came out.
No, no. I think probably 8 or 9 years ago I saw it for the first time.
I feel like we have to have an intervention here because I feel like there's either you're 10 years younger than you actually say,
mm-hmm.
or
let's
you
go with that one.
Or you lived in a cave for 10.
it's
amazing though to me. I get on. Don't worry, I get on Renee for that. I'm sure there's movies you've seen that I haven't seen.
Yeah,
but
Step Up to the Streets.
I think it's.
Have you seen that one?
I have not.
Eight Mile. Not as good as Step Up.
I have seen 8 Mile.
Oh, that's a good one.
I have seen 8 Mile.
It's classic.
But I think that, but I also think that certain genres, like the guilty movie pleasure genre, is an acquired taste. And so it blows my mind because I see all of them. So I think I'm just in this bubble of everyone else has seen all of these, right?
I think I tended to see more thrillers than straight action.
I see.
So
I'm
needed
not
a little
I'm not
bit,
trying to throw you under the bus. I'm just saying that this is a movie you own, and a lot of them I've either forced you to watch or our fans have forced you to watch.
Yeah.
Sometimes to your chagrin, a.k.a.
Sometimes, but
Machete and sort of Boondock Saints.
Yeah, a little bit of Boondock Saints. But no, this one I saw independently without any pressure from anyone, and I really enjoyed it. And so I purchased it, and then I watched it again last night and had a great time again.
That's awesome.
Nicolas Cage, when I was younger, was acceptable, and now I feel like he's not.
Do you think he's not acceptable in this?
I think he's way less than he is now. He's become a little bit of a caricature the same way Michael Bay has. But if Michael Bay made a film with Nicolas Cage right now,
oh my God.
Can you even imagine?
You gotta watch it.
I would watch the shit out of it.
I would definitely listen to it on audio. he has just become a fake Nicolas Cage at this point. But even back then, there are moments where you can see that he's
You mean Zeus's butthole?
Yeah, dude, or just
what in the name of, how in the name of Zeus's butthole did you get out of jail?
Yeah,
out of these cages?
He randomly yells words, and he'll get the crazy eyes for no reason.
Oh, yeah.
There's just little bits, and it's tough. It's tough to deal with a little bit, but
you're telling me that he hasn't made some gems now. I think Ghost Rider was a phenomenal film.
It
was great. There was great character development. There was great storyline.
Listen,
I'm waiting for one of our fans to go, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, I'm
Corey's
not
being sarcastic. It's engineer sarcasm.
Do you remember Wicker Man?
Yeah,
the bees, man.
I didn't even see Wicker Man, but I hear it's amazing.
I've
never seen Wicker
this
Man.
This is actually a fun tangent, but I went to a sketch
show
one time.
That's all we're about.
Yeah, I went to a sketch show and they did Nicolas Cage teaches acting.
Oh, wow.
And it was probably 6 or 7 clips from The Wicker Man. And they were all independent clips. And he would be like, "This is how I would project happiness." But every single clip was a clip of him punching a woman in the face, a different clip. And the last one was him chasing a woman for a minute and then catching her and punching her in the face. So
a lot
there you
of
go.
Women punching.
This is the thing that we're laughing at. This is a good, good end point to this tangent. Let's laugh about spousal abuse.
I mean, I don't think they were his spouses.
That's a different story.
I think they were possessed. I think he wasn't punching the women. He was punching the demons.
And the only way to get the demon out is to just punch the shit out of
him. It's the same way you get rid of a shark.
You know somebody sometime next week is going to be like, "The guys on the show were saying you just punch him because they get a demon."
Yeah. I just want to also clarify, this was not my idea.
No.
And
I
don't endorse it. I'm just explaining to you what I saw.
And you know what? There's definitely only one side to punching women, and it's a bad side.
It's a bad side.
So
yes.
Don't punch women. We're not claiming moral equivalency here. Don't punch women.
Such a good call.
I did it again!
No, you didn't.
I didn't say his name, just like all the GOP senators.
That isn't... Now you're doing it.
Sorry.
We don't have to be coy. Actually, like, fuck him.
Fuck him.
You know what I mean?
Fuck him so much, man. Fuck him. And I know some of our fans are like, don't get political, blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
yeah, then
it's in our stratosphere.
Stop listening.
But also, like, just then turn us off for 15 seconds while I say, actually, fuck him.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
Fuck Trump.
Anyways, all right, you can turn it back on.
Okay, you can turn it back on. We're back. Sorry. So let's get into the plot in 3 minutes now that we've just said fuck Trump 700 times. We're going to do the plot in under 3 minutes. Corey, jump in on this, and we'll just basically ping-pong it back and forth and try and remember everything that happens. So, do you want to start with you, and then we'll bing around, or no?
Oh,
yes.
I can fire it up.
Nice.
Okay, yes, all right. You ready in the booth, Steve? Okay. Take it away, Corey.
So, Ed Harris is real pissed off. So, him and a bunch of military guys go in and they steal some VX gas, which is really bad. And they show you how bad by killing one of the random guys that doesn't have a name. So, you knew that guy was going to die immediately.
Yeah.
After that, where do we go? Nick Cage.
Yeah, Nick Cage is in his workplace,
poison
and they're
center.
Like they got a crate that apparently had poisonous gas in it. So they're testing it out, and then the gas comes out because one guy was not careful,
waving the baby arm.
And so then they start to melt, and then he defuses the bomb, and then the sprinklers come
out. Can I jump in? I love the fact that the guy is playing with something that came out of a case that has a bomb in it. Like, let me just pick this doll.
We'll get into that. We gotta get the plot first. Okay, shit. Okay, so then Nick Cage goes home, says, anybody who would bring a kid in this world is a dick. And then she's like, well, I'm pregnant. And he's like, oh, okay, that's awesome. And then he's fucking her on the roof, and it's this kind of weird sex scene with a shitload of candles. And he gets a call saying, hey, they've taken over the Rock because Ed Harris and his Marines go take over the Rock. They aim these VX gas rockets at San Francisco. And then they're like, we need to get on there. There's no way to get rid of the VX gas. So they're like, we know one guy, cue Sean Connery. Who wants it? Corey, yes.
So they go get Sean Connery out of prison, and they put him in this room, and then they offer him a deal. They're like, hey, we can do this, and you know, they're tempting him. Sean Connery gets real pissed off and decides to use a quarter to cut open the window, stick his head in, and then start yelling about how this is a setup and I hate things.
And so they offer him a deal of immunity if he goes and
they rip it up.
Yeah, and gets Alcatraz. So he gets taken to the hotel where he escapes via haircut. He escapes and he goes to see his daughter. And he tells her, "I'm going to be back." And Nicolas Cage tracks in there, and they recapture him, and then they head over to Alcatraz.
Him and the Marines go, and they got these G.I. Joe style like scuba suits and vehicles that go underwater. These mini subs. They get in there. He goes, rolls through all the flames to get through. Ah, shit! Rolls through all the flames. He lets him in. Marines go up there, they trigger the detector, and then they're like, I will not stand down! They all get shot, everybody thinks they're all dead, and then Sean Connery's about to leave, Nick Cage convinces him to stay. They go and defuse the one in the morgue, there's a shootout and shit going on, and then
another shootout underground.
Another shootout in the Goonies tunnels, and then there's, oh god, then there's...
And then Sean Connery's gonna leave again, and Nick Cage is like, no, we have to defuse these bombs,
again.
And
then he comes out and turns himself over to Ed Harris, and then they're in jail, I take pleasure in gutting you, boy, and then he escapes, and then, Jesse, you wanna take it away, or
fuck,
you want me to do it? I'll just go! And then they go, and then they escape, and then they're fighting the guy, and then there's mutiny, and the bad guys, they're like, they're gonna fire the rocket at San Francisco, and then Ed Harris misdirects it, and then they shoot each other up, except the main three nut jobs, and then Sean Connery's fighting some of them while Nick Cage is off trying to defuse the last rocket, and the dude's after him. He's like, I'm gonna get you! And are you the Rocket Man? He fires off Tony Todd, who gets impaled, and the other guy gets a green thing in his mouth, and then he shoots the
flares.
Green gas. Then they find the tape. Oh, Jesus. Sorry, I did want to talk about that minutia that you were talking about, but I was like, oh, shit, because Jesse and I are very guilty about getting into the minutia during the 3 minutes.
Yeah, we do that.
I think I needed a Gatorade after that, or something.
Which flavor?
Would you like to sponsor us, Gatorade?
Gatorade, Powerade, vitamin water.
We're
open. At this point, we're unaffiliated.
At this point, we have no ties.
My favorite's Arctic Glacier.
Ooh!
Yeah.
So, let's talk about...
Flavor spot on.
I was... the first thing... Renee watched this with me, and she'd never seen it. And she was like kind of like a running commentary of things. Like, in the beginning, she was like, is this supposed to be California? It doesn't rain this much in California. And I was like, honey, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks dramatic when he's walking through the cemetery and there's rain and shit.
So here's my favorite part of the movie, and forgive me if this is naive on my part, but his wife's gravestone, his wife's tombstone, says his wife. That's legitimately what it says.
Yeah. What's
and
your
I was
name?
Like,
or did, it says her name.
I think
right?
it says her name, but it also just says his wife.
Yeah.
And it's like, why you couldn't have put, you had to use a pronoun. You couldn't have used his, because now he's the only one allowed to stand there.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. Also, you would assume that that means that he's buried next to her. And
right.
It is confusing. I remember seeing that last night and being like, what the f- what?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just Michael Bay didn't do any research and was like, man, his wife.
People need to know that this is his wife.
Yeah, it's not that he didn't do research. It's literally just, it's the exposition police came along and were like, here we go.
Yeah, no one knows this
the
is
the only
his wife.
Way he'll, yeah. they'll know. Not through the dialogue of him kissing the metal and everything.
Yeah.
Nope. You had to literally see.
I got real confused until I actually saw his wife on. I was like, why is he in front of this tombstone?
Is it his girlfriend?
Why is he getting so emotional?
Oh, good. Okay.
So that first...
Is it his husband?
Here's where this movie, and you and I talked about this when we were rewatching it, is this movie does what Michael Bay doesn't do anymore, which is it has several Save the Cat moments. And in writing terms, for those that don't know, Save the Cat is where you give either your hero or villain a moment where they make a good decision in a bad situation that makes you side with them. And Ed Harris is a villain that has layers where, like, in the beginning, they're tranquilizing the guys. They're not killing anyone, even though the one dude that gets clocked in the neck and does a flip around to the pavement is probably not going to walk properly ever again. So that's some of it gets a little like, that was just cool. But even in moments later, like when I'm fast forwarding ahead, but when Ed Harris gets shot, Sean Connery and Nick Cage go to drag him out because they realize he's not as bad as they thought. Whereas now we talked about how Transformers, it's just like there's a soldier caught in a helicopter and they're all just like, fuck you, we're out. And they just jump out and leave him in there to crash and die. And the Autobots are, like, crashing and blowing up highways. This movie still has stakes. They even comment in the, although arguably in the car chase scene, several FBI agents are dead or dismembered from those cars. When he yells out, I hope you have insurance! And it's like the car just flips 17 times. I was like, I hope you have a metal cage in there to keep yourself alive. But would you guys agree that this is, like, still kind of more reined in, still somewhat caring about human life, Michael Bay?
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie does a really interesting thing in making the traditional good guy the bad guy and making the traditional bad guy the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates really interesting dynamics individually and then also between the main characters.
Yeah.
And it's something that I don't think a lot of people do. It's tough to do. It's tough to make us care about a prisoner of 40 years, and it's tough to make us root against.
The actors help.
Yeah, totally.
How can you not love Ed Harris? He's awesome.
Oh, he's great. He's
and
great.
Sean Connery.
And he gives so much humanity to the to the character. And like it's they do it in a way where like he's set up as the main bad guy, but then it turns out the bad guys are the people around him.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing I really like. That's the thing I thought that brought up the humanity side is at that point where he's arguing with those two new guys about shooting the rocket. And he's like, I just won't do it.
It's
wrong. You know, they called my bluff.
And he
we
says,
lost.
You think I'm gonna kill 80,000 people?
Yeah. And it brings him back. And I know they're doing that right before they kill him, so you have some sympathy for Ed Harris. But at the same point in time,
But they thread that earlier when they're murdering the Marines, and he's saying, stand down!
Yeah.
Stand down! Lower your weapon! And that's like, that's so good, because he doesn't want to lose any more life.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing this because he's at the end of his rope. He's seen 83 of his men die and be shit on by the government. So he's pissed. And the only way he knows to get their attention is a violent government. The only way he knows how to get their attention is with threat of violence. He never intended to. That's why they never. I like that they never kill any of the hostages either. Although we were talking about how like the hostages are in the first act. One shows up like 2 hour, like hour and 40 in, and then at the very end, you never revisit them again.
Well, because the prison blows up, doesn't it?
No, they make sure to say we didn't hit the prison tower. We just hit the guard tower or something.
The rocket hit on the left side.
They make sure to say
that
it missed. Because otherwise, that'd be such a shitty ending.
That'd be so shitty if they just bombed the hostages. Like, everyone else was dead already. And they just flew through and bombed 80 innocent civilians.
So Michael Bay of them.
Yeah, whatever. Fuck
them.
As long as Nick Cage can have a funny ending with the microfilm.
Uh-huh.
So let's get into this first... The first scene that I really, really love is when Nick Cage and his buddy, which, by the way, Nick Cage is an expert at real-life mousetrap, apparently, when he shoots the plastic dart and everything goes and lights on fire, and it's like, you have way too much time on your hand.
By the way, sorry, one more thing I want to say before we jump into this. Another fucking movie that shows us someone throwing up.
You hate that!
Enough!
Corey, just so you know, Jesse has a strong aversion to actually seeing... throw up coming out of someone's mouth. You believe that just... you tell him.
Yeah, you can just hear the sound and, like, get the camera angle from behind. We don't need to see vomit coming out
Jesse
of someone's mouth to know that
and
they're
so
vomiting.
When we watched Team America World Police, where he vomits for about 7 minutes, it was Jesse's nightmare.
Oh,
and he's still
worst.
Mad at me for that.
It's not, but it's in, like, everything.
It's
and
in everything.
I hadn't remembered it in The Rock. And then Nick Cage
like,
had, like...
Fuck it!
Yeah.
I hate this movie now.
Yeah, so I need a new TV.
So this first scene where I love the set, I love how fast this movie, everything just, there was a pace to 90s action films where every single scene, even if it was loaded with exposition, which a ton of this is, it just moves the plot forward. Everything is like, and it has a pace and an energy, and even the intro of Nick Cage and his dorky buddy who shows up again sort of and is like, hey, I'm getting out of here, I'm going to do something totally different, isn't that cool? But this first scene is a really intense, awesome way to show why Nick Cage is an expert and why he would be good for this by doing instead of a bunch of words.
Yeah.
And when that sarin gas goes off, that scene is intense. And I love all the scientists and the guy that's like, we're fucked. It's like, there's enough quirk to the characters, but it's not annoying like Transformers 5 through 9 or whatever get, you know?
Yeah.
I think they have little moments, like in the interrogation room when the guy's like, well, that's a good way to go. Well, I guess that's one way to go when he takes the cuffs off. There's like little, it's sprinkled. It's not overwhelming.
Sure. And there's also like in that particular scene, like you said, we learn from doing, not from talking. Like we learn that you need
the
shot to the heart.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
We have that sound clip. You want to play it? Can we play clip number one?
Look how big this is. You want me to stick this into my heart? Are you fucking nuts?
Love that stuff.
That's what I mean.
I remember loving that so much when I first saw it. You want me to stick this into my heart? Because, that's a huge needle.
Yeah.
And do you know anything about actual medical? Would that...
Not a thing.
Do you actually shove it into your heart? Is that a real thing?
You must.
I've seen it in two different movies.
Pulp Fiction
and
this.
I'm going to go...
Crank.
Three things now. It's got to be true.
if three movies have
three
done
movies
it,
have...
I
somebody fact-checked
I
it at some
hope,
point, right?
I hope The Rock sourced Pulp Fiction for this. They're like, should we call a doctor? No, I'm pretty sure I saw it in Pulp Fiction. Oh, for sure.
Tarantino does
his
research.
Yep.
Put it in.
Uh-huh.
Put it in.
Trust him.
So the trainee in this, I forget his name, but he's completely useless.
Yeah.
He does nothing. It's Nick Cage doing everything as their suit's melting.
Well, no, he starts the entire process by picking up a baby from a bomb crate. A crate with a bomb in it. Let me pick up this baby and start playing with this baby. Like I would think that would be day one in bomb training. Like, why don't you not
with
touch the bomb?
Parts. Yeah.
Maybe this was day one.
This is how you learn.
That's a real shitty training scenario. Let me put you in this gas that could kill you.
I will say, we'll move on a little bit, because I will say that Renee, the next thing she picked out was when Nick Cage's wife comes in and says she's pregnant, and then she's 3 weeks. Renee was like, you don't fucking know you're pregnant at 3 weeks. You haven't even missed your period yet. She was like already like, bullshit, which now that we have a baby, Renee calls out whenever we see a TV show and she's like, I'm pregnant. She's like, you're not even showing, asshole. You know, like women in TV and film don't show until they're like 8 months.
Sure.
And then suddenly it's like, just a little
bomb. Like a pimple.
Little beautiful little bomb.
Yeah.
Little Audi. Just their belly button's an Audi.
Yeah.
So let's go into... When all the tourists get taken, this is where I thought the tourists had more of a plot, because they have a couple funny moments, and the guide, like Ranger Bob or whatever his name is, has some funny shit, and so you thought they'd revisit them. I don't care that they don't, it's fine, but the setup for them is hilarious. Can we play clip number two?
What kind of fucked up tour is this?
Oh, shit. Oh, man, I'm trying to remember a tour that was that bad for me. I was in Miami.
Yeah.
And I was shooting those Major League Baseball spots, and I was taken on a tour of this random club that was, like, super fancy, $10,000 to get in, and there was a there was Lamar Odom was there. There was a flamenco band. There was a guy who was a lawyer for drug cartel hitmen. There was a gold-plated woolly mammoth statue. This is all true. I'm not bullshitting. There was a gold-plated woolly mammoth statue that was worth like $28 million. There was a theater that had been designed by Baz Luhrmann that Madonna had performed at for rich people. And as I'm walking through this and I'm just seeing all this unnecessary spending of wealth when you could do literally anything else with your money, I just looked at the guy and I was like,
what kind of fucked up tour is this?
And how do I make enough money to join this club?
Right.
I would never spend $10,000 a month on that shit. It's insane.
Never say never.
Never say never.
That sounds like an awesome place.
It was pretty awesome.
Is Lamar Odom there all the time?
Well, he and I then got in a car with the guy that was leading us around, and they took us to a club, and Lamar Odom and I were rapping along to Triumph by Wu-Tang.
Which
was incredible.
That's a good song. I mean, I would have gone Cream by Wu-Tang. I think that's
what was on the radio.
That's a better song.
And, but I definitely did the white guy thing where I blanked out like every other word because I'm not going to say that. I don't even say that in the privacy of my own car rapping. I'm just like,
no.
I use the word brother because it works. It works.
It's syllabically the same.
It's syllabically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Syllabically. Anyway, so that's my Lamar Odom story. True story. What kind of fucked up tour is this?
Is Lamar Odom okay?
I just
want to follow up.
He is.
Okay.
He's a nice guy.
All right, good.
Anybody got anything on that tour? Or did I just take up 10 minutes of our time for that? It's fine. We'll move on. So then they call the FBI. There's the counterattack that the FBI is starting to plan because they think they're screwed. Can we play clip number 3? This is where they build up General Hummel and how he's a war hero.
3 tours in Vietnam, Panama, Grenada, Desert Storm, 3 Purple Hearts, 2 Silver Stars, and the Congressional Medal of Jesus.
I didn't realize they gave out the Congressional Medal of Jesus.
Only to very special individuals.
I think it's if you're a high-ranking Marine and you also went to clergy school. Is that what it is?
I think, yeah.
Mm. Or is that too obvious?
No, I think that's it.
I think that's what it is.
It's
a Michael Bay film. It has to be taken literally, right?
Sure.
The Congressional Medal of Jesus.
That's actually, the Congressional Medal of Jesus was also in that church that they went to at the end, but it was in the left leg. they opened the right leg, the hollow right leg.
They got the hollow, and they should have found the Congressional Medal of Jesus.
Should, if they had been given further directions, they would have known.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Then we get more into what the VX gas is, which the VX gas is still one of my favorite weapons. Because a lot of times action films have the same kind of doom and gloom scenarios. It's a nuke. God, how many times have we seen people thwart a nuke? Or if it's a superhero movie, how many times is it a giant fucking beam going up to a clutter thing in the sky that's going to bring the whole city to an end?
Beams kill aliens.
Beams kill aliens.
That's what I've learned. They actually teach you that in science school,
especially,
is that beams kill aliens.
Especially if you kill the mothership alien or any of that.
Also, a weapon of choice for a lot of bullies is mean words. So there's that.
Mean words. There's a lot of mean words.
I learned that in middle school, unfortunately.
I did too.
Yeah.
But we learn what the VX gas is, and it's no fucking joke. We saw it, but now we learn the magnitude of what it can do. And then later on, we learn the specifics of how it, like, eats away at you. So can we play clip number 4? This shit is lethal.
What is the potential casualty rate for a single rocket armed with VX poison gas, General Peterson?
60 or 70.
That's not so bad.
That's not so bad.
What a dick.
70,000 dead. 1 teaspoon of this hits the floor. It's lethal up to 100 feet. 1 teaspoon of this shit detonated in the atmosphere will kill every living organism in an 8-block radius. Get the point?
I love that he hammers it home, but get the point.
Yeah.
I don't get why he leads with 60 or 70 just to up it to 60 or 70. Why don't you just say 60 or 70,000? Like, you're getting my hopes up here that we're only going to kill a couple people.
I would only assume it's because they all hate this fucking bureaucrat guy that's in the room. And so he's like, 60 or 70, baiting him to be like, well, that's not so bad. Fuck you, dude. Go back to Washington. Because there's always that guy in the 90s. There's always that Washington guy who comes in and who's like, well, the president and everybody told me, who's completely out of his league, has no...
Is this Bill Cosby?
Oh, oh God. Yeah, I guess so. Anyways, whatever.
Bill Cosby's not worried about 60 or 70. too soon? too soon?
Oh, shit. So I did write down... this is a weird transition. I wrote down the interrupt. It's kind of rude. They interrupt Stanley mid-fuck with 75 candles lit. There was an unnatural amount of candles lit.
And, sure.
And I mean,
was it like 60 or 70 candles?
60 or 70.
Must have been.
1,000. But anyway, so they set up Sean Connery. There's this awesome setup where he's like, he's an escape artist, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, that's when he was younger. He's my age now. I have to get up 3 times to piss, which I sometimes have to. That means I'm fucked when I'm in my 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm just never going to sleep again.
Take that pill, that colon pill.
So they do the interrogation. We talked about how the coin, he hammers this quarter and then cuts the window, but he shaves around and then just elbows the center, which I don't know how that equates to weakening the glass. I'm not sure.
Because he's James Bond.
Okay. Oh, shit.
I think that's the main thing you're missing here. A couple of things that I wanted to say. One is, have you ever answered the phone during sex? Either of you?
No.
No. Okay. No,
absolutely not.
Great. Number two is...
Who does? Only in movies.
Only in movies. It's the only time in the history of the world that anyone's done it.
That it's acceptable.
The second thing is Sean Connery. So this is one thing where you have to like suspend your disbelief a little bit. That Sean Connery, 40 years ago, was this mastermind criminal. Or not criminal, but like...
MI6 agent.
Yeah, yeah, agent. He's been he's basically doing nothing for 40 years.
Just reading.
And he like immediately jumps back into it. Like, I will not ride a bike for a year, and it'll take a little bit of time to get my balance when I jump back on. For 40 years, he hasn't been escaping the like most locked down prisons on Earth, but all of a sudden he's just gonna, now that he's 60, just jump right back in there.
So
and it's something so extreme, but like I could see the bike analogy. You know, like you're riding a bike that comes back. Like, escaping a prison is so insanely difficult.
Right. So, but I'm just saying, like, even with something so simple, there would still be an amount of time where I would struggle. And he just,
so the phrase like riding a bike does not apply to you.
Well, it comes back eventually. It comes back
like
eventually.
Riding a bike. Eventually. For Jesse McIntosh.
I mean, that's the end of the saying. No one finishes the saying. Like, yeah, it's just like riding a bike.
That should be on your tombstone something, eventually. Like in 100 years.
No, my tombstone's going to say her husband.
Her husband.
Yeah.
Can we play, just because I know we once again spent like 40 minutes on the first 10 minutes. So he gets his hair cut, and oh my god, one of my favorite characters is the stylist in this.
The Boston Common guy.
He's so funny when he's like, I don't care who you are, I just want to know, are you happy with your haircut? It's so funny. And this clip number 5 shows a little bit of humor and how badass Sean Connery is. Can we play that?
Just clippers, no scissors.
No scissors, you've got to be kidding me, no scissors. I mean, did they tell Picasso no brush?
Scissors, this man could kill you.
I can't cut anyone's balls off with a trimmer now, can I?
I mean, I guess you could if you really... It'd take a little while.
Is he trying to say that cutting balls off is equivalent to killing? Is that what he was saying?
I think so.
I think he was saying that. Right. I just wanted to...
Yeah.
I have a spotty past with
with metaphors on this show.
Yeah, nut references.
We had a troll on YouTube comment on Jesse's misunderstanding of a metaphor. And then we got into it with him.
Ooh.
Yeah, but so I just want to make sure that I'm understanding that that's what
you
he's
are.
Saying.
You are. Okay.
Okay, because that's how I feel.
Yes.
So
okay, we're going to have to skip ahead a little. We already talked a lot about the car chase. I love, one of my favorite moments is when he throws Womack over the balcony and he's hanging, he's holding him there, which, by the way, if he threw him, unless he really had that wrap, it would have just slipped out of his hand.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, but I guess he had it tied.
Or he also would have dislocated his shoulder.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Like, the same thing would have happened to both of them.
Because he's in, like, his 60s.
Yeah.
And he just goes, whoop.
And it looks...
Full-on 150, 60-pound dude.
Yeah, it looks like it takes no effort to hold him up, either. Like,
he's
Sean Connery's just
heavy.
Sitting there like, oh, I just got this guy. Yeah, let's have a full conversation about what's going on. And it's this
even when he says he's getting heavy, it seems like he's just toying with him.
Yeah, and it's also something where, like, he wasn't watching. Like, he was far enough back from the ledge that he didn't see how much slack he had left.
Yeah.
So there's no way to brace for that rope getting taut and, like, yanking at your arm.
Yep.
You're just, like, hoping that you'll be flexed at the right time.
Could you imagine if it had played out like reality and you're just like, oh, yeah. And then he just falls and dies and they're like, ah, shit, that's how I was going to escape.
Well, if you're going to San Francisco. I guess we still have to go to Alcatraz though, so.
So we'll skip the car chase because we really covered that, I think, already, mm-hmm. the trolley and everything.
I think so.
It's one of my favorite car chases in cinema history. I love it. But let's play when the Ferrari gets crushed by the trolley. Can we play clip number six?
Man, I just fucked up your Ferrari.
It's not mine.
Wait, let's replay it again, because it has Corey's favorite one scene stealing man in the background. You can hear the trolley guy.
He's still going.
Still pissed.
Hey, man, I just fucked up your Ferrari.
It's not mine.
It just going down in flames. I love how big of a dick the bike guy, when he's like, it's not mine. He's like, cool.
Yeah.
It's so
there's
good.
So many random little people in this movie, in the beginning of it, that make these absurd little comments, like the trolley guy, like the guy on the bike, like the stylist guy. There's so many little random guys that make this movie interesting.
That's so good. But it's enough that it's just fun little blips. The problem, like I said, with Future Bay is that his blips turn into... future before anyone else.
Future Bay.
My Future Bay is that he takes it and then hits the gas on every. So everything that works in this movie, he does times 50 now. And everything that, I don't think anything doesn't work for me. But then things start not working because he's doing it. Anyways, let's talk about what is awesome about this.
Yes.
So Mason meets his daughter. There's a good little father-daughter moment there that's kind of touching, and it grounds him in some sort of humanity. And then Nick Cage does the nice thing and pretends he's there to get him to team up, and even though they're all guns drawn on him. So his daughter clearly just is either not paying attention or doesn't want to believe it.
That's often how I take someone away for some benign task, is I just get...
When you want Hannah to go grocery shopping, you show up with 18 cop cars.
But she's with a friend. I like...
You call in all your favorites. That's why there's no police in your area. They're all using to pick your wife
up. Point home.
It sure does.
Can we play clip number seven? This is when Nick Cage is kind of fed up after this car chase.
What do you say we cut the chit-chat? A-hole!
That's an example
That's
of him
a
yelling.
Great example of him randomly yelling a word.
I wonder if that was written... Some of these lines had to be Nick Cage just improvising random shit. I can't imagine in the script it said, cut the chit-chat, a-hole, or Zeus's butthole, or any of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I wonder if it's also just, like, it sounds weird and improvised because of his inflections and, like, random screams.
Yeah.
Because, like, cut the chit-chat, a-hole, like, if that were delivered in a normal way, then you could probably see that in a script. But, like, when the way he says it, cut the chit-chat, a-hole, like, it makes it sound weird.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think of a metaphor for a-hole. Damn it, I don't have anything. Do you have anything, Jesse, that's not... I was going to do something very literal.
Yeah, so I was... when I was in high school, elementary school, middle school, that area
all
of time.
Just all areas of time.
Yeah,
in your childhood.
Looking back at those areas, so I would say probably 5 through 18. Or somewhere in there, not that whole... Let me explain to you how old I was.
Perfect, we only have 13 minutes left, but I want to hear that.
Great. It was between fifth grade, so I was 10.
Cut the chit chat.
So I used to play the saxophone, and so I would play, and I would think I was reading a note, and I'd accidentally hit the wrong note, and as we all know, on a saxophone, you get the notes by covering the holes with the with the, I don't know, hole covers, you could say.
Keys.
Yeah. No, I'm going to call them hole covers.
Hole covers is probably correct.
And I was sort of like quirky, and I would refer to the notes as chit-chat. And I accidentally played the note A too many times, and I looked at my saxophone, and I yelled at it.
What do you say we cut the chit-chat A-hole?
There you go. There you go.
I like that one.
2 minutes
I like
of me
one.
Describing how old I was.
Perfect. Yeah. We didn't need those.
You can cut that part if you need.
So, long story short, they get to the island. The Marines are running this operation. We got Kyle Reese there, Michael Biehn running the operation. They go up into the shower room where they trigger the thing that's been set up as the motion sensor. Massacre happens because one of the nut job Marines who aren't part of Hummel's main team, who are the hired ones, knocks over some bricks and just all hell breaks loose. They're all killed. It's terrible. And Sean Connery and Nick Cage escape. But then Nick Cage chases after him, yelling as loudly as possible when they know the Marines are just above them somewhere. And then it's a surprise when they drop down not one, but two escalating firebombs. And the second one is where Bay definitely just goes, I know I'm on this like confined space, but can I just blow up every tunnel?
Bay gets bay.
Bay gets bay.
If you set a bomb off below a building, wouldn't you assume that that would like?
I think it's just a fireball, like napalm. Well, like, so right.
I'd be worried if I were the one throwing it down there. I'd be like, I'm right above this thing. I'm concerned about my own well-being.
And it goes off pretty instantly. Like, yeah, they lit it like we used to light black cats back in the day, where it's like, oh shit.
Yeah. So what's the point of the first bomb? Because they dropped on the first bomb and it explodes and makes a small explosion. Then they drop the significantly bigger bomb down to blow up that one. Yeah, like let's just get rid of the first bomb. Let's just drop this bigger one.
Because the first
one
just kind of is a warning shot. Like, hey, by the way, we're gonna try and catch you on fire. So like, run to where water is about knee deep.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's a bad move, bad guys.
Bad guys make bad decisions.
Oh, I did skip Sean Connery's awesome quote when he rolls through the whatever furnace thing, and he's like, I just hope they haven't changed the timing. Which, by the way, my Sean Connery impression.
That's
pretty good.
That's
just not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Do you want to hear Channing Tatum doing Sean Connery?
Please, please.
I hope they haven't changed the timing.
There you go. Perfect. That's a running joke here. It's Jesse's immaculate Channing Tatum. Can we play clip number 8?
Welcome to the Rock.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
When Renee and I, this is a true story. When Renee and I went to San Francisco, we went to Alcatraz, and I kept quoting this movie. And she hadn't seen it till 2 nights ago, and it was driving her nuts. But literally, we get off the ferry, and I turn to her, and I said pretty loud,
"Welcome to the Rock."
And a few like tourists chuckled because they were all thinking that everybody's thinking the same thing. And then I did the other quote, which we're gonna play. Why not? Clip 10. I kept saying over and over again.
You sure you're ready for this?
I'm doing my best.
Your best. Losers always whine about their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
That. Oh, wait.
Carla was the prom queen.
That quote is timeless.
That's where you start to see Bay going over the top. Like, oh, of course your wife was the prom queen.
Of course you're an 80s John Hughes movie grown up. Yeah. I use that quote anytime I can. Anytime somebody says, I'm going to do my best, or like, hey, can we get this shot done? Oh, we'll try our best. Hey, can we do this in 15? Can we do the rest of the movie in 9 minutes? And Jesse will say, you'll do your best. And then I look at Jesse and I say,
you sure you're ready for this?
I'm doing my best.
He says, I don't know.
Your best. Losers always whine about their best.
I'm not a loser.
Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
What?
Carla was the prom queen.
And not to get nitpicky, but he's talking about like winners in high school or like people who were prom queens.
There's a lot of prom queens out there, Ben.
But I mean like prom queens in the past or
what he's saying is all winners of all ages go home and fuck current prom queens. That's what he's saying.
Jesus. Oh, thank God you're not a teacher anymore, Corey, or you'd be fucked after being on this episode.
I would just tell you to shut oh God, I'd drop
cut the
chit
chat.
At least we cut the chit chat.
Yeah. Yeah! So they build up Mason some more. Can we play clip number 9? This is something that happens in action movies all the time that I love, where they set up all the odds of why they shouldn't be using this person, and then they're Obi-Wan. They're their only hope. Can we play that?
This man knows our most intimate secrets from the last half century. The alien landing in Roswell, the truth about the JFK assassination. And Mason's angry. He's lethal. He's a trained killer. And he is the only hope that we have got.
Yes! That's so Rambo First Blood Part 2. That's so Rambo First Blood.
It's also like he has all of our secrets from the last half century, except for the last 30 years when he's been in jail. He doesn't have those secrets. He has other ones.
Just other ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Because unless the film's being updated somehow via remote film updating.
Yeah.
So the morgue shootout is one of my favorite shootouts. I love that when they first come in, knife to the dude's neck, and he's just dying like, rah, rah, you know. And then the shootout with the other dude who comes up, two M16s blazing, shot in the feet. Then the air conditioner
crushes
his skull. And can we play clip number 11? This is Nick Cage before he's warmed up to the violence.
Yeah, okay, that's just about the most awful thing I've ever seen.
And then the foot shaking.
Yeah,
the foot shaking and that's distracting him is a recurring theme in Bay movies, where In Bad Boys, they have that thing, too, where they drop the leg and Martin Lawrence is like, watch where you're swinging a dead leg, man. And I just love that there's, like, this like, aversion to what happens to the body after they die.
It's really interesting. Like, yeah. They never address it, really, in any other... Like, no. They're... You just had a shootout, and there are dead bodies everywhere, yeah. And then we just, like, leave.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, and he's like, can you stop it? What do you want me to do? Kill him again?
Yeah.
I always assumed shootouts in movies are much like in video games, where you shoot the people, the bad guys, and then they die, and then they just disappear. And you just walk over and pick up their guns and their money, and then you go and
they just fade away.
Do your life.
Yeah. Or like Resident Evil, they just melt into a pool of ooze, right?
Yeah, ooze disappears on its own. It's a scientific fact.
It is. Science. So then let's skip forward a little because we got 6 minutes. There's the Goonies chase, which, by the way, there's no way that exists. If anyone can fact check me and tell me that those actual caves with carts and pulleys and what looked like waterfalls exists in Alcatraz, I would be amazed.
Yeah, why
is that?
Why was underneath Alcatraz and built up like a city? Like, what the fuck was that?
It's like a hobbit journey down there or something.
Yeah, or are you going to the other side of Alcatraz? Yeah, just go underneath and take the cart, and you'll be fine. You don't have to walk across premises.
They jump out the morgue through what looked like a laundry chute. They end up on a cart. They're running. It's like an Indiana Jones. It becomes Indiana Jones meets the Goonies meets The Rock. And they crash at the end. Nick Cage gets in the metal barrel, and Sean Connery survives a very, very hard crash and is just chilling upside down. Yeah. He lights the one dude on fire. That dude falls and dies from getting the flames put out, apparently, and maybe crushed by the cart, I guess?
Unclear.
It's unclear. Anyways, then they kill the other dude. There's a big shootout again, and then Sean Connery decides the only way to save the hostage that they bring out, because it's like, oh yeah, shit, we haven't mentioned the hostages in about an hour and 15 minutes. So they bring one out, the most scared-looking man on the planet. He sells it. Mm-hmm. There's some humanity behind those terrified giant eyes of his. He has giant, terrified eyes.
I have a question. Just
I have an answer.
I hope so. I do. Just a concerned person about casting and money.
Yeah.
Why didn't they use one of the other hostages that already had a line?
Yeah. I was wondering about that. Yeah, like, why don't you bring out the park ranger?
That we already knew, so that we could feel a little more empathy towards them.
Instead of maybe they tried and their performances weren't as good.
That's
that guy,
possible.
He has a good performance.
Like Ranger Bob, right?
Ranger Bob. Maybe he was too comedic. He's like, I'm Ranger Bob. I have no kids. I'm lonely. And they're like, oh, shit.
I'm hoping for kids. Is anyone on the other end of this line?
Why does your voice go like this and almost Kermit?
I was trying to emphasize his rangerness.
Okay. Anyways, so Sean Connery comes out, and this is another great cliche with action movies, like things like Heat, where Robert De Niro and Al Pacino get to sit across from each other, where in the real world, the bank robber and the cop, or the escape convict and the military guy would never actually have a conversation. It'd just be like, okay, cool, that's done. But they get this little tete-a-tete they get to have. So can we play clip number 12?
Governor, I don't quite see how you cherish the memory of the dead by killing another million. And this is not combat. It's an act of lunacy, General Sir.
Real life, that's what would happen.
Personally, I think you're a fucking idiot.
So good. So good.
Especially after he eggs him on like that.
I know. He's in real life, you can't egg on bad guys like that.
Personally, I think you're an idiot. Well, he must have understood that Ed Harris was not wanting to kill people.
I think so. I think he read him.
Yeah.
Because he's a spy. He can read people.
Yeah.
But I love that you get that in movies. And then we have the other two guys that find Nick Cage, who's trying to defuse the last of... There's like three rockets left. He's trying to defuse the third one. And they throw him around. They throw him through glass. They do a full-on Terminator rip through the wall and pull him.
Yeah.
And then they get... The one guy says, you're lucky they want him alive. They want you alive, or else I'd take pleasure in gutting you, boy. And I would have pulled that clip, but Nick Cage's reaction when he's in jail is even better. Clip number 13, please.
I'll take pleasure in gutting you, boy. What's wrong with these people, huh, Mason? Don't you think there's a lot of anger flowing around this island? Kind of a pubescent volatility? Don't you think? A lot of angst, a lot of, 16, I'm angry at my father syndrome. I mean, grow up! We're stuck on an island with a bunch of violence for pleasure-seeking psychopathic Marines. Shame on them!
It's the perfect time for a lecture.
Yeah.
When you're
on them.
When you're imprisoned in Alcatraz that's about to get attacked by the U.S. military.
Well, and you got to love this line, too, because the guy that says it, the military guy, says it in such a serious way. And it's such an obscure, like, ridiculous thing to say to somebody. Yep. And then they have Nick Cage make fun of what the guy's saying, like, fun of their own line.
Not only make fun of it, but dissect it and really give us a dissertation on the emotional landscape of who we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then... shame on them, you know? It was nice.
He's not wrong.
He's not
shame on them.
So we'll skip ahead a little bit because there's the mutiny where they shoot the rocket because they haven't paid him yet, and then Ed Harris changes the launch codes. It goes in the ocean instead. They end up, Mexican standoff, shooting each other. Sean Connery and Nick Cage get Ed Harris out. As he's in one of my favorite moments where he's like, my God, what have I done? And he tells him where the last rocket is because this was all a bluff. He was just angry, and it's such a good fucking villain. And then Nick Cage runs off, and Sean Connery has some cool fight scenes. But the two main things I want to focus on before we have to go in 59 seconds is when I recorded the entire exchange between Tony Todd and Nick Cage when they're in the rocket room, because it's fantastic. Can we play clip number 14?
Come on. You know how this shit works? You know how this shit works?
It's only a knife.
We got started off on the wrong foot. Stand good, speed, FBI. Let's talk music. Do you like the Elton John song Rocket Man?
I don't like soft ass shit.
Oh, you know. Well, I only bring it up because it's you. You're the Rocket Man.
Not only does he get shot through the window. Wait.
I don't like how that shit works.
Then he lands and gets impaled.
Yeah.
It's a weird talking how the rocket would probably shoot through him.
Yes.
Or at least do more damage than just like getting kind of like Mike Tyson punched out through a window.
Yeah, he might have dislocated his shoulder.
My favorite thing about that moment, I know we got to get going here, is you know how this shit works? Nick Cage is saying that about a very complicated bioweapon. And then Tony Todd's response is, you know how this shit works with a knife. And I wish you would have been like, yes?
Yeah, yeah, you do just, actually.
You stab people with it.
You do a lot of stabby or cutty.
Yeah.
Or gutting or like a fish.
Or dice.
Dice.
You can get a nice, get into that onion.
I liked and Julianne a lot.
Ooh, that's a nice
I know we have to go, technique. But the last thing I want to talk about is my favorite death scene, I think, in any action movie ever, where he's fighting the other nut job mercenary, and he's getting strangled. And by the way, we talked about how that... I wish we could have really dissected how many times the VX gas would have exploded in Nick Cage's hand. Because first, he's doing all these crazy stunt jumps while holding it. Try holding a raw egg in your hand and running around and it not bursting that. Then he puts it in his front pocket. Would have exploded several times.
Sure.
But it stays there in enough time for him to shove it in the dude's mouth and slam his jaw shut to instantly make him spew up what looks like acid and then his face bubble. It is the... we gotta wrap. It's my favorite death scene for a bad guy ever because they built up this weapon and then they use it in such an absurdly awesome way.
Yes. Also, a couple of things to think about with those weapons is there were approximately, I would say, 90 of those balls in each missile, and there were 14 missiles, and they were just trying to get San Francisco. Like, the amount of weaponry they had could have, just decimated the world.
Everyone's gonna die.
Yeah, like,
mutually assured destruction.
What were they thinking?
I love this movie so much. Sorry we didn't get to talk more about the needle in the heart, which I love so much at the end, and the tape and finding out who JFK was really killed by. But I had a blast talking about The Rock. I love The Rock. And that's all the time we have for today. Corey, thank you for coming on the show.
This is fun.
Is this the first podcast you've ever done? You've ever done anything like this?
No.
Well, we want to have you back anytime. Anytime. Basically, no. I just want to be selfish and have you visit. That's it.
If you want to do my podcast without Ben, that's fine also.
Jesse, where can they find you?
You can find me at Too Much Jesse on Twitter and Instagram, at The Prom Losers for Sketch.
All right, and I'm at The Ben Begley on Instagram and Twitter, and Funhouse Massacre is on Showtime, like I've said 100 times before, and we're going to have some cool shorts coming out soon, as soon as we get some festival announcements, so I'll be telling you all about that. And until next time, what is your guilty movie pleasure?
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.